All right, so we're going to be, let's look some more at this whole issue of politics, social media, and attitudes. I don't know if you're encouraged by those findings or not, but something about knowing that the way the social media is handled can make a difference in how people who are partisans interact with each other, and not only how they interact with each other, but also how they interact with the information. Because very often, as you know, we've been talking about this for some time now, you can present people with absolute fact. And if the facts don't line up with what they have chosen to embrace, they will reject those facts every time. And they'd rather be dishonest and say, those aren't facts. That's not truth. That's not the real deal. That's not reality. Then change their opinion and say, you know, say they were, admit they were wrong and change their view, or risk becoming disloyal to the party by saying, oh man, now we've been wrong on this one. A lot of people would prefer to just go ahead and sacrifice integrity so they can hold the party line. Isn't it interesting that when we remove politics from the discussion, people are more willing to accept and embrace facts, truth? What does this mean for science communicators who want to bring about social change? Well, one of the main problems with communicating climate change is that even if you do get people to watch your program or listen to your new scientific information, they can nevertheless interpret it in exactly the opposite way that you intended. Giving people information is not enough to change their minds. That goes back to what I was sharing with you. You can be, and it can be true information, fully accurate. You haven't left anything out. You've given all angles of the story and presented them with truth, and they can still reject it. They can still choose to reinterpret it, to give it the twist that they wanted to have. Partisan bias can still lead them to hold on to their old beliefs. Social media networks act as a filter that can shape how people interpret and perceive new information. The good news is that communication networks that are designed to create social influences in the absence of partisan priming can harness social learning to significantly improve cross-party exchange of information. If partisan priming is removed from a social setting, then new information that reaches people as part of their democratic discourse can arrive in a way that can effectively change their minds. If the partisan priming is removed, if politics is taken out of the equation, as a result of these findings, social media giants like Facebook and Twitter are now starting to take seriously the idea that they might need to design their interfaces in ways that promote involved social learning across the aisles. The challenge they face is that political imagery and contentious interactions are emotionally arousing and highly engaging. In short, they're good for business. The question for the next generation of social media is what these companies should do when what is good for business is not good for democracy. What do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Be honest. So they go ahead and sacrifice that which is good for business for that which is good for democracy, or vice versa? You know what question I'm really wondering? Are the two truly mutually exclusive? Do you have to have a situation that benefits one or the other? Or put another way, is it truly impossible to have that kind of interchange across parties that is good for business and good for democracy? I think there is a way to do it in such a way that it is good for both business and democracy. I mean, people, there aren't that many people who are just so opposed to truth and integrity that they're not going to listen unless that which is false and blood pressure curdling is what's being conveyed and purveyed. I'm just telling you now. I think we might need to take another look. Okay, let's get back to our exploration of, well, the way we respond in order to either avoid or get over the flu. What do we do? Vaccinate? Do we do nothing? What about cold and flu season? I know there are people who disagree with me, but I can tell you, we definitely hear more and more about, you know, more about people getting the flu and colds and viruses and all that kind of stuff during the winter season than any other season that I'm aware of. Of course, we have people who have allergies, and some plants can run some people crazy. But when it comes to sicknesses that have to do with colds and viruses and that kind of stuff, that seems to always be worse during the winter than spring, summer, or fall. But especially worse than during summer, spring or summer. Well, what do we do about that? Regardless of when it's worse, what do we do to survive it? Isn't it interesting that we have a season that is called the cold and flu season, indicating very clearly that there is a time of the year when colds and flus really kick in strong? Well, again, we're listening to WebMD. Let's hear what's happening with this whole issue of surviving cold and flu season.
Flu is a virus which is transmitted through what we call respiratory droplets. This means that when I cough, I'm coughing millions of flu viruses into the air. Once an individual is suspected of having the flu or tests positive for it, the child who has the flu needs to be kept out of school. And they need to be kept out of school until they've been fever-free for at least 24 hours. Aside from keeping your child home from school, teach your child to cough by coughing into his arm. Covering the cough prevents all those flu viral particles from spreading throughout the air. If your child coughs in his hand, which is what most children will typically do, teach them to wash their hands. The key is to do it for long enough to effectively remove all the germ particles. Soap is very useful. Even more important than soap is water and friction. Once a child has contracted the flu, we move into the realm of secondary prevention, which means treatment. Primary treatment of the flu is fluids, rest, fever reducers, acetaminophen or ibuprofen, to reduce fever and to reduce pain. The most important thing that we can all do is to immunize ourselves and our children. If someone doesn't catch the flu, they can't spread it.
All right. You know, I asked a little bit earlier, what are your decisions? How are you handling this? What are you doing? Are you saying, nope, I am not getting my child vaccinated, immunized against the flu vaccine? My children do okay without that. I hear where you're coming from. But remember, he talked about friction and water when it comes to cleaning our hands being even more important than soap. I remember hearing another doctor talk about that too, especially the rinsing. Rinsing, 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 rinsing to make sure that all, even what we may have stirred into the hands while we were rubbing them, applying the friction, washing all that away, washing it all the way through the rinsing process. Help our children understand, hey, let that water pour over your hands. We don't want them in there all day, but that rinsing is very, very, very important. Okay, let's hear some flu vaccine facts.
The flu vaccine is really your best defense against the flu. While it's not 100% effective, it's still so important for everyone 6 months and older to get the flu vaccine. There are two types of the vaccine. There's the flu shot, which is the traditional way. There's also a nasal spray flu vaccine. The flu vaccine is actually quite safe. For most people, you'll have few to no side effects. Now, it's really important to get that flu shot or flu vaccine every year, because not only does our immunity weaken year after year, the strains change from year to year. So it's important to get that flu vaccine every single year.
What do you think about the fact that we have a flu vaccine that can be used nasally, that can be sprayed into the nose. You don't necessarily have to get the shot. Something about options. Yes, indeed, especially for people who don't like getting stuck. How many of you faint at the sight of a needle? I hear you. All right, we'll be back in just a few.